This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenvin
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Apocalypse Now, the U.S.-Israeli Master Plan for the Middle East, Part 1, Death and Devastation in Lebanon. July 12th, the Israeli ambassador to the United Nations, Dan Gilman, called a press conference. This morning, a war has been declared on Israel's northern border, he said. Earlier in the morning, Hezbollah militants had crossed Israel's northern border with Lebanon, seizing two Israeli soldiers and killing seven more. Gilman went on to say, "Responsibility for this belligerent act of war lies with the government of Lebanon, from whose territory these acts have been launched into Israel." He said that Israel, in effect, was opening a second front, having already laid a waste to the Gaza Strip and having tightened its stranglehold on the West Bank. The Israeli military termed its offensive Operation Just Reward. Operation Just Reward. The Israeli Chief of Staff for the Israeli Army, Dan Halutz, put it very simply by saying, "Nothing is safe in Lebanon." As simple as that. Today, on Taking Aim, part one of a multi-part series, Death and Devastation in Lebanon. Ralph?
The general rationale for this pre-planned aggression against the entire population of Lebanon is well put into context by an illuminating report today by Joshua Frank, headlined, "Kidnapped in Israel or Captured in Lebanon, Official Justification for Israel's Invasion on Thin Ice. As Lebanon continues to be pounded by Israeli bombs and munitions, the justification for Israeli's invasion is treading on very thin ice," writes Joshua Frank. "It has become general knowledge that it was Hezbollah guerrillas who, quote, kidnapped, unquote, two IDF soldiers inside Israel on July 12th, prompting an immediate and violent response from the Israeli government. And let it be noted here that all of the bourgeois media and all of the embedded journalists and all, for that matter, of the liberal journalists and the nominal advocates of, quote, peace, unquote, replicate this category of kidnapping on the part of the Hezbollah resistance in Lebanon. Kidnapping? The original story, as most media tells it, goes something like this. Hezbollah attacks an Israeli border patrol station, killing six and taking two soldiers hostage. The incident happening within Israel, in Israeli territory. The sources contending that then Israel sent a commando force into southern Lebanon. But what is the reality? Agence France-Presse reports, according to the Lebanese police, two Israeli soldiers were captured in Lebanese territory in the area of Aita al-Sha'ab, where an Israeli unit, special forces, had penetrated Lebanon in the middle of the morning. The French news site Voltaire.org reiterates and confirms the same account. In a deliberated way, Israel sent commandos into the Lebanese backcountry to Aita al-Shab. The Associated Press had in fact confirmed this very reality. Quote, "The militant group Hezbollah captured two Israeli soldiers during clashes in southern Lebanon after Israel had sent ground forces into Lebanon." Joseph Panossian for Associated Press on July 12th. The Hezbollah forces had captured the soldiers and were seeking to prevent the Israeli armed unit from penetrating deeper into Lebanon. The Hindustan Times on July 12th confirmed the same account. The Lebanese Shiite Hezbollah resistance movement announced on Wednesday that its guerrillas have captured two Israeli soldiers in southern Lebanon. implementing our promise to free Arab prisoners in Israeli jails. Our strugglers have captured these two Israeli soldiers during the Zionist operation in southern Lebanon, a statement by Hezbollah said. The two soldiers are now moved to a safe place. MSNBC reported the same. Hezbollah has captured Israeli soldiers inside Lebanon following upon an IDF special operation in southern Lebanon. A report from the National Council of Arab Americans based in Lebanon confirmed the same story. The Israelis have not been able to enter Ayta al-Shab to recover the tank that was exploded by Hezbollah and the bodies of the soldiers that were killed in response to the Israeli incursion. So what we have here is the multiple sourced confirmation that we have a false flag operation of a classical variety with the invention that Hezbollah had entered Israel and, quote, kidnapped Israeli soldiers, when in reality it was an Israeli special forces operation that was attacking a village in southern Lebanon, resisted by the Hezbollah guerrillas, who are the defense movement of the population of southern Lebanon.
Ralph, Hezbollah is started as a coalition of Shia groups in 1982. And it was the resistance to the Israeli occupation of Lebanon. Israel had been bombing and attacking southern Lebanon since the late 1970s. And in 1982, moved into Lebanon with the incredible siege, saturation bombing of Beirut and starving the population and devastating the south of Lebanon, which led to an 18-year occupation. An occupation that was resisted with great skill and force by this developing Hezbollah movement, and resulted in the first victory over the Zionist state, which was the removal, the withdrawal of Israeli forces from the south of Lebanon. Yet we have here the entire Israeli government backed up with full force by the U.S. government, stating, as Chief of Staff Dan Halutz put it, "If the soldiers are not returned, we will turn Lebanon's clock back 20 years. And the Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert saying again that nothing was safe in Lebanon, that this was an open-ended war, a war that would be maintained until Israeli victory. Israel has blockaded Lebanon, prevented any relief, any food, anything coming into Lebanon. It has maintained an artillery barrage 24 hours a day across the border with M109 and 155 howitzers that have pinpoint accuracy, and with incredible saturation bombing with U.S.-supplied F-15, F-16 fighter jets." Ralph?
1982, which was invoked here by the Israelis themselves, was the occasion of what was called Operation Peace in the Galilee. Operation Peace in the Galilee was a full-scale invasion of Lebanon, engineered by Begin and Sharon, with the stated purpose of reducing the Palestinian population in the refugee camps of Lebanon from 500,000 to 50,000 people. You and I, Maya, were living in the Ain el-Helway, the largest Palestinian camp outside of Saida. Ain el-Helway means sweet spring. And the irony of this, brothers and sisters, is that the occupants of Ain el-Helway were in fact driven out of the Galilee in 1948. And what we have going on here in 1982, as we do now, is 1948 redux. Let me back up a moment and remind us that in 1940, the head of colonization for the Zionist movement, Joseph Weitz, stated, "As a matter of the full intent and policy of the Zionist colonizing movement, there is no room for the Palestinian population in this country. Not one tribe, not one clan, not one village, not one family shall be left," quote unquote. And in 1948, 6 months before the state was even formed, 800,000 Palestinians out of a population of approximately 930,000 people were driven out through a series of massacres from one end of Palestine to the other. And as the villages were destroyed, and as the population was massacred, and as they were pursued in their flight to be slaughtered on the road, the Zionists proclaimed that the Palestinians must leave and flee, or they will not be allowed to remain alive. 1948 Redux. And in 1982, the victims in the Galilee who were driven out, who had resettled in the refugee camps outside of Sidon, Ain El Helway, and in Rashidiya, and in Elbas, and in Mia Mia, these people were now targeted once again. Ain El Helway was taken as a grid. It was the largest camp, with nearly 80 to 100,000 people living in the proximity of Ain El Helway. The Israelis saturation bombed it. They took it as a grid, one quadrant after the other, for 10 days and 10 nights, saturation bombing with the heaviest equipment and implosion weapons, fragmentation bombs, white phosphorus shells. After 10 days and 10 nights, they shelled it from the ocean and from the mountains, 10 days and 10 nights again, round two. And then they moved in with their bulldozers. We were there. And they leveled everything. And the people who were sheltering, who were seeking shelter from the bombs, they closed over those shelters and buried them alive with family members clinging to the bulldozers. The mass graves in Ain El Helway were such that the body fluids formed rivulets, and the rivulets flowed into the actual offices of the International Committee of the Red Cross building on the outskirts of Ain El Helway. And the ICRC, then as now, said not a mumbling word. They just moved their offices across suffering Lebanon. The Palestinian camps were treated to these massacres as the population itself was targeted with unrelenting barbarity in 1982. Saturation bombing. What is happening today in Lebanon is the replay.
Ralph, the Israelis, in their belligerent manner, have stated, as Gillerman put it, responsibility, he said, for this belligerent act of war lies with the government of Lebanon, from whose territory these acts have been launched into Israel. Launched into Israel. And he went on to expand and to state clearly, unequivocally, what the true intent is of the Zionist state. Gillerman stated, responsibility also lies with the governments of Iran and Syria, who support and embrace those who carried out this attack. And this was echoed by President Bush, meeting in Germany with the G8 on Thursday, the very next day. He stated, Syria needs to be held to account. Syria is housing the militant wing of Hamas. Hezbollah has got an active presence in Syria. The point here is that this pre-planned offensive by the Zionist state is on behalf and in conjunction with the United States, not only backing the Zionist state, but it's part and parcel of their move to reshape the Middle East, to occupy the Middle East, to destroy any resistance of the population.
And indeed, to fragment each Middle Eastern country in its turn ad seriatim, as we will show in the course of this series. The real target here is not just the destruction of the Palestinian people, as the assaults upon Gaza and the West Bank manifestly demonstrate, not only to once again devastate the population of Lebanon, but to go on to Syria and then to Iran. In fact, in 1982, every male from 7 to 70 was rounded up in the Palestinian camps and the villages across Lebanon. Maya and I, when we were in the camps where we were living, we collected nearly 60,000 affidavits from family members, 60,000 affidavits on for a recovery of their sons and their husbands and their fathers and their grandfathers and their cousins and their immediate family. We took those affidavits to Leah Tzemel, the anti-Zionist lawyer in Israel, who filed them with the Supreme Court. And that is the replay here. But brothers and sisters, Hezbollah did not exist. Amal was the movement of the southern Shia population at the time. Hezbollah emerged in response to the Ansar I, Ansar II, Ansar III, the concentration camps in which the population of Lebanon and Palestinians were sequestered and in which thousands still exist, still disappeared. Hezbollah emerges as the popular resistance to this occupation and this wholesale kidnapping and incarceration and detention under conditions of torture of the male population.
Ralph, we should also mention that Hezbollah emerges as the social service agency for the Shia poor. The poor of southern Lebanon and the those who were pushed up into the suburbs of Beirut, like Hatahareik, the Shia poor, for which the Lebanese, the fragile, the decomposed Lebanese national government, decomposed through the efforts of the Zionist state, through the many years of the civil war, the lack of social services for Palestinians in Lebanon, which had been provided by the Palestine Liberation Organization infrastructure, which was eliminated in Lebanon through the 1982 Israeli attacks, and then for the Lebanese poor, who also had used the Palestinian social services. It was Hezbollah, the coalition group that formed, that provided these social services, and today in Lebanon, Hezbollah provides social services for a quarter of a million people. And with the attacks upon the infrastructure in Lebanon, Hezbollah even set up its own construction company and went house to help people with the reconstruction of their homes. So what we have here with the attack on Hezbollah is not only an attack on resistance, it is an attack on the fabric of Lebanese life. And that is why we have Major General Udi Adam, the chief of Israel's Northern Command, saying that Israel had not only expanded and comprehensive plans to battle Hezbollah in Lebanon, it said, "This affair is between Israel and the state of Lebanon. Where to attack? Once it is inside Lebanon," referring to the IDF, the Israel Defense Forces, "everything is legitimate, not just southern Lebanon, not just the line of Hezbollah posts." And that is what Israel has done. It has attacked the Bekaa Valley. It has attacked the north in Tripoli. It has attacked the south. It has attacked everywhere within Lebanon. By Thursday, the day after, that's July 13th, Israel had bombed the Beirut airport. The first attack from the air left huge craters in all three runways, forcing the closure of the facility. The second, by means of shells fired from gunboats, had ignited two fuel depots. Israel also struck two military air bases, that is, the Lebanese army military bases, located near the Syrian border. It hit roads, bridges, power stations, and factories and villages in the southern part of the country. It has, by now, maintained over 3,000 sorties. In Beirut alone, it dropped 23 tons on one apartment complex. That's just one apartment complex. Remember that a JDAM, the huge bombs dropped on Beirut by the United States, is a 5,000...
On Baghdad, is
a 5,000-pound bomb. That's 2.5 tons. This is a 23-ton devastation of one apartment complex. And this is what Israel has been doing, targeting ambulances, targeting hospitals throughout Lebanon.
Well, we will detail the magnitude of the slaughter and the particularly fiendish weapons that are involved, even as we did in 1982. We were there. We lived through it. We were in Fahani. We were in Hamra in West Beirut. We were in the camps of Sabra and Shatila. We witnessed the implosion weapons, the high flaring magnesium bombs, the fragmentation bombs, and the white phosphorus and the napalm. Brothers and sisters, on July 21st, 2006, Matthew Coleman, writing in the San Francisco Chronicle under the headline, "Israel Set War Plan More Than 1 Year Ago. Strategy Put in Motion as Hezbollah Began Gaining Strength in Lebanon. Israel's Military Response by air, land, and sea, the article states, to what it considered a provocation by Hezbollah militants, in reality unfolded according to a plan finalized over 1 year ago. In the 6 years since Israel ended its military occupation of southern Lebanon ended, it was driven out, it watched warily as Hezbollah built up its presence in the region. Quote, of all Israel's wars since 1948, this was the one for which Israel was most prepared, said General Gerald Steinberg, professor of political science at Bar-Ilan University. The preparation began in May 2000, immediately after the Israeli withdrawal, when it became clear that the international community was not going to prevent Hezbollah from gaining strength. By 2004, the military campaign scheduled to last 3 weeks, the very specific campaign that we are seeing now, had already been blocked out, and in the last year or two, it has been simulated and rehearsed across the board, unquote Gerald Steinberg. Matthew Kallman continues in the Chronicle, more than 1 year ago, a senior Israeli army officer giving PowerPoint presentations on an off-the-record basis to U.S. officials, journalists, and think tanks set out the plan for the current operation in revealing detail. In his talks, the officer described a three-week campaign. The first week concentrated on destroying Hezbollah's presence, bombing its command and control centers, disrupting all communication and transportation arteries in the country. In the second week, shifting to attacks on individual sites. In the third week, ground forces in large numbers introduced to knock out targets discovered during reconnaissance missions. Planners anticipated the likelihood of major civilian casualties, the article continues. In short, the advanced scenario, the Chronicle states, now in its second week, is still unfolding in accordance with the plan.
And, Ralph, the third week is when Israel intended to introduce ground forces. And what it is doing now, according to the Northern Command, is minimizing the ground forces. Israel states that it doesn't intend to occupy southern Lebanon. In fact, it does intend to occupy southern Lebanon, is already building detention camps for those that they round up. These are detention camps they're building in northern Israel. But this third week, with the large numbers of being introduced, they have set up now with smaller numbers of going village by village. And as I said, there is a 24-hour bombardment from the north of Israel into the villages of the south.
Maya, the Jerusalem Post confirms on the 23rd of July, Northern Command Major General Yudi Adam acknowledged in a briefing at Northern Command Headquarters in Safed on Sunday that the commander of the IDF's administration has already begun preparations for instituting a military administration in Lebanon by the IDF over the past week. Certain units will give us breathing space have been called up, including the commander of the unit. Adam also described plans to set up a large prison camp in Lebanon, another such prison camp. And let me amplify this. Wayne Madsen, July 24th, 2006, confirms the following. The Israeli invasion of Lebanon was planned between top Israeli officials and members of the Bush administration. On June 17th and June 18th, former Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Likud Knesset member Natan Sharansky met Vice President Dick Cheney at the American Enterprise Institute Conference in Beaver Creek, Colorado. There, the impending Israeli invasions of Gaza and Lebanon were prepared. After receiving Cheney's full backing for the invasion of Gaza and Lebanon, Netanyahu flew back to Israel and participated in a special former prime minister's meeting in which he conveyed the Bush administration's preparations for carrying out the, quote, clean break policy, i.e. the elimination of past Middle East peace accords, including Oslo. Present at the meeting, in addition to Netanyahu, were current Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, former Prime Ministers Ehud Barak and Shimon Peres. Former Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir is too old but was kept informed, and Ariel Sharon remains in a coma after a series of strokes. After the American Enterprise Institute meeting, Sharansky met with the Heritage Foundation in Washington, attending a June 29th meeting at Philadelphia's Haverford School, a meeting led by Daniel Pipes. Sharansky, with Senator Rick Santorum, who was beating the drums for war against Syria, Iran, and Islamofascism, at a national press club composed of members of the Neocon Israel Project, on whose board serves Georgia Senator Saxby Chambliss and VOP Representative Tom Davis. The plans for attack were confirmed. The U.S. supported invasions of Gaza, Lebanon, and the impending attacks on Syria and Iran represented the events that were predicted to take place prior to the November election in the United States. And indeed, this plan, which was described in the San Francisco Chronicle, began 6 years before, is confirmed by a further documentation, which we'll cite shortly.
Ralph, the Wayne Madsen piece summarizes two articles written by Dean and Dromidas from Executive Intelligence Review, who at first uncovered this June 17th to 18th meeting by the American Enterprise Institute at Beaver Creek, Colorado. And what's interesting, and we will discuss in later shows, this clean break, a new strategy for securing the realm, is something we've discussed previously on Taking Aim when we've discussed the plans for breaking up the Middle East into its ethnic and religious components. The true plan of the Zionist, as elaborated by Odi Dinon in his Strategy for Israel in the 1980s, a policy document that had been prepared for the Israeli Mossad, the intelligence apparatus.
And I just mentioned here, Maya, that this entire plan for fragmenting the Middle East as seriatim and inventing the category of terror is set forth in my book, The Hidden History of Zionism, with a specific chapter devoted to Odi Dinon's strategy for the 1980s.
The June 25th capture, that is the capture by Hamas of the Israeli soldier Gilad Shalit by Palestinian militants, perhaps it wasn't Hamas, served as the pretext to launch the, quote, Rebuilding Israel deterrence strategy that had been outlined by Netanyahu and was a key factor of the clean break. And this, as we've seen unfold in Gaza, and we'll discuss in future programs, this is now the first front, and it is the critical first front. You might say it began recently, a couple years ago, with the destruction in the West Bank of Jenin and the other Palestinian cities, and then went on with the construction of the barrier wall, the multi-billion dollar barrier wall, which is really just a temporary measure. What Israel has done under cover of all these incursions is to make the Jordan Valley, their primary source of water for the West Bank areas, the Jordan Valley, a key portion of the West Bank and a major portion of it, off limits to Palestinians. That has unfolded during this episode. And now with the second front, the Israel-Lebanon border. And this is what we see unfolding now. The key, this is all a precursor to moving on to Syria, moving on to Iran. And the response, such as German Chancellor Angela Merkel saying on July 13th, one day later, Israel has a right to self-defense. The very words of President George Bush, the very words of the U.S. Congress, with nary a person either objecting or stating the reasons why we need to object. Very few Congress people voted nay.
And well, Maya, you're talking about resolutions in the United States Senate and two resolutions in the House of Representatives that not only entirely endorse Israel's invasion of Lebanon and invasion of Gaza, but call for the same in Syria and Iran. And what's significant about these resolutions, which are an outright embrace of the expansion of war to Syria and Iran, and a total endorsement of any Israeli operations, and particularly with respect to Lebanon and the destruction of any resistance in Lebanon, and the same with respect to Gaza and the West Bank. What's interesting about the resolutions 922 and I think 921 in the House and the Senate resolution is that there was no opposition. In fact, the Black Caucus, 95% of the Black Caucus, with the exception of two members, voted for it. And what is the response of Cynthia McKinney? Abstention. What is the response of Barbara Lee? Abstention. Huh? What is the response of Dennis Kucinich? Abstention. They showed up, but they didn't vote against. And everybody else amongst the Democrats voted for. But let's do something very important here about this particular series of operations, which were prepared 6 years ago, and indeed with the fabrication of a kidnapping of Israeli soldiers that were in fact captured during an Israeli operation in Lebanon. Here is the Village Voice with respect to what is called the secrets that Clark kept, what the General Neville told us about the Bush plan for serial war. This is an article by Sidney Shanberg in the Village Voice on September 29th, 2003, and it is extremely illuminating about the current events in Lebanon. Serious planning for the war in Iraq had begun prior to September 2001. In fact, the administration had drawn up a list of six other nations to be targeted over a period of 5 years, Wesley Clark discloses. As I went back through the Pentagon in November 2001, senior military staff officers had time for a chat. Yes, we were on track for taking out Iraq, but there was more. This was part of a 5-year plan with a total of 7 countries targeted, beginning with Iraq, then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Iran, Somalia, and Sudan. I left the Pentagon deeply concerned. Now, he never disclosed any of this in his CNN commentaries. And he writes, if America had known such things, tragedy could have been prevented. But on page 131 of Wesley Clark's book, he writes, the real sources of terrorists, U.S. allies in the region, Egypt, Pakistan, and Saudi Arabia, were to be deployed in these undertakings. And Wesley Clark confirms that, in fact, all of the plans for these series of wars were laid out prior to 2001, and the events of 9/11 become clear as the instigated, orchestrated pretext. Here is, in fact, on July 23rd, 2006, a reaffirmation of this information. Pentagon planned to attack Lebanon. Bush's plan for serial war had been revealed by General Wesley Clark. 5-year campaign plan, a total of 7 countries, beginning with Iraq and then Syria and Lebanon and Iran. According to Wesley Clark, the Pentagon by late 2001 had prepared to attack Lebanon. And indeed, this entire scenario is part of the U.S. neocons' master plan, Rebuilding America's Defenses, published in August 2000, by the Project for the New American Century. Thomas Connolly, the top official at Lockheed Martin, was one of the leading authors of that plan. Maya.
Ralph, it's time for our station break. This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Apocalypse Now, the U.S.-Israeli Master Plan for the Middle East, Part 1, Death and Devastation in Lebanon. We'll return after this brief station identification. This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. We return to the second part of Death and Devastation in Lebanon. Ralph, I want to mention again the words of the Israeli officials and how this is not a small operation. Nobody could ever consider it a small operation. And what it means in terms of the Israeli population. Israeli Premier Ehud Olmert came out and explicitly stated that the Israeli offensive against Lebanon would, quote, last a very long time. He stated this to a cabinet meeting this Sunday. And according to a government official, Olmert said, quote, the diplomatic process will not come at the expense of destroying infrastructures of terror, and this process will take a very long time. The defense minister, Amir Peretz, said Israel did not plan on a wide-scale invasion of Lebanon. The facts contradict those words. Peretz said the ground operation is focusing on a limited entry of forces. We are not dealing with an invasion of Lebanon. They are not dealing with an invasion of Lebanon. They are meting out the entire destruction of the infrastructure. They have created a situation of over 1 million refugees. They have created an enormous humanitarian crisis, such that even the United Nations is saying this is a humanitarian crisis beyond belief. Ralph?
Maya, Uri Avneri, the Israeli peace activist who had long been involved with the Israeli military and indeed really with the Israeli intelligence services during his years in the military, has published an important article called The Real Aim, July 15, 2006. The real aim is to change the regime in Lebanon and to install a puppet government. That was the aim of Ariel Sharon's invasion in 1982. Sharon and his pupils in the military and political leadership have never given up on this objective. As in 1982, the present operation was planned and carried out in full coordination with the United States. And indeed, there's no doubt that it is coordinated with a section of the Lebanese elite. That's the main thing. Everything else is noise and propaganda. Uri Avneri writes, on the eve of the 1982 invasion, Secretary of State Alexander Haig told Ariel Sharon, before we start this, we have to create a clear provocation that will be accepted by the world. That provocation took place at the exact time, Uri Avneri writes, when Abu Nidal's terror gang tried to assassinate the Israeli ambassador in London. Now, bear in mind that Abu Nidal was totally run by the Mossad. That's been documented by Taking Aim and by others many times. This, of course, had no connection with Lebanon whatsoever, and even less with the PLO, because Abu Nidal's main assassination operations were directed against the PLO itself. This time, the necessary provocation has been provided by the capture of two Israeli soldiers, but everybody knows they could not be freed except through an exchange of prisoners. Now, the very same thing happened, Avneri writes, 2 weeks early in the Gaza Strip. Hamas captured a soldier. But let's be very clear about this. This followed on a series of devastating attacks by the Israelis, assassination attacks and armed missile assaults on Palestinian families on the beaches of Gaza, assassinating family after family. And indeed, when the Palestinians attempted to respond to Israeli soldiers, a tunnel had been built, a tunnel which we now learn was totally monitored by the Shin Bet. As the Palestinian militants came through the tunnel, they were monitored by the Shin Bet, and when the Israeli soldiers were captured in that operation, which was in response to the devastating assault by the Israelis in Gaza, they had their pretext.
Ralph, we should also mention that the Israelis have conducted assassinations of the Hezbollah and other groups in Lebanon, too. Let's look at what the Zionist forces have done throughout Lebanon. According to the Minister of Transport and Public Works, Mohammed Safadi, stating, and the world is reported by the Wall Street Journal, July 24th, 80% of the major highways of Lebanon have been destroyed. 95% of the country's bridges have been destroyed. The telecommunications infrastructure is in tatters. The Daily Star from Lebanon writes on Monday, July 24th, Israeli bombardment leaves telecom infrastructure in tatters. Lebanon's mobile networks, and most of the telephone service is through cell phones, and satellite antennas are being targeted by Israeli warplanes, causing at least $10 to $15 million in material damages and a drop in the revenues of the telecom sector. Turns out that the telecommunications sector is a major source of revenue for the Lebanese government. It is a state-owned telecommunications system. Israeli warplanes have hit transmitters, relay stations, and satellite stations in Beirut, the south, the north, and the Bekaa Valley. The warplanes bombarded a satellite and antenna station in Kezeron Saturday, killing an employee of the Lebanese Broadcasting Corporation and destroying the television antenna. And observers, this is the Lebanese observers, say that the Israeli forces are cutting all communication links between Lebanon and the outside world. And part of that reason is to destroy the blogs, the personal communications that have been coming out of Lebanon to that have been reaching people throughout the world through the internet. In other words, so that people won't see the horrendous devastation. And we mentioned before that Israel is trying to eliminate all the population south of the Litani River. That is 15 to 20 miles from the Israeli-Lebanese border. And they have dropped leaflets that say, due to the terrorist acts against the state of Israel that came from your village and your homes, the Israeli army has been forced to respond immediately against these acts, even within your villages. For your own security, you were ordered to leave your villages and head immediately north of the Litani River. As the Israeli IDF states, an officer stated to the New York Times reporter Stephen Erlinger, we want the freedom to attack these places. I believe in air power. I believe in our ability to destroy Hezbollah without going into Lebanon again the way we did in 1982, which was with the full-scale occupation. The only way to do this is to attack any movement we detect. Any launch or any activity aimed at hitting Israel, especially from the villages we see. The key words in this statement is to attack any movement we detect. And that has meant massacre upon massacre. Massacres with white phosphorus, as documented by the Lebanese government and the doctors throughout southern Lebanon. Mass graves, attacking the ambulances with the clear red cross upon them. Ralph?
More than 1 million people have fled their homes in Lebanon. Much of the press tells you that it's 400,000, 500,000, even 600,000. In fact, by July 18th, over 1 million people had been forced to flee their homes. This was affirmed by Marie Houzet, the United Nations spokesperson in Geneva, who warned that these figures would increase dramatically as the attacks continue. By the 18th, it was over 1 million people. Brothers and sisters, there are 3.6 million people in Lebanon, according to some figures. In fact, the figures that we have seen that are more accurate are 2.6 million Lebanese and about 416,000 Palestinians in the camps. We're talking about 3 million people. Over 1 million people have fled their homes, are in flight with all of the infrastructure destroyed. Here is the Los Angeles Times on the 21st, fleeing for their lives into the grim unknown. The orders from Israel spread at dawn by radio, by leaflet, by menacing cell phone text messages. All civilians must clear out immediately or risk death. Panicked by these evacuation orders, whole families pack into cars and pour north on a torturous route of one-lane dirt roads and bomb-pocked highways, smoke boiling into the sky over the treetops as the bombs rumble in the hills, jets slicing the sky overhead, attacking the cars as they seek to flee. abandoned cars, bombed cars, their glimpsed corpses seated inside, the people riding with their hearts in their mouths, their faces hard with fear and fatigue. They tie strips of white cloth to antennas. They wave white rags and undershirts out of windows as if they could flag away this sweeping death. They convoy with neighbors. One family had packed a black and white cow into the bed of a pickup. They hit the main coastal highway, and they find themselves exposed to the stretch of sea with the gunboats there. They gun their cars as fast as their resting cars can go. They try to outrace the death, terrified that stopping for a moment will invite the strikes from above. Craters the size of minivans gaping in the roads, eerie quiet settling over the hillside where houses once stood in the shade of orange and pomegranate seas. Many didn't know where they were going, how they would return, enduring death and destruction for weeks. This article describes an all-out onslaught against the civilian population, a genocide replicating the ethnic cleansing of Palestine in 1948, replicating the destruction of all of Lebanon in 1982, replicating the targeting of the civilian population in the villages and the cities and the towns of Lebanon, the devastation of the Palestinian camps, the massacres that unfolded in one camp after the other, the mass graves, the mass detentions. This is a war of total devastation and destruction rivaling Tamerlane and Genghis Khan as the Zionist machine, backed by imperialism, unfolds its message of death on the population of Lebanon.
Ralph, the reports coming through in the press are harrowing, as you have read. And in The Guardian, July 18th, Clancy Chesse in Tyre, Sur, major city of southern Lebanon. 12-year-old Noor lay heavily bandaged and fighting for her life in a hospital in the southern Lebanese city of Tyre. She is one of many children killed and injured in the Israeli airstrikes on this Mediterranean port in the past days. She has large burns all over her body, reports the doctor treating Noor at Jabal Ahmar Hospital. She is losing a lot of fluids. She probably won't live. Her life is now in God's hands. The ambulances are streaming into the hospital, and the doctors hurried to treat the victims of the latest bombing. This is July 18th. The bomb fell on a small water canal next to Qasmiya refugee camp, home to 500 Palestinians. The victims were 11 children taking an afternoon swim in the canal. The first blast left a crater nearly 4 meters deep, burying many of the swimmers deep under the orange earth. 7 of the children were injured, 3 critically. 3 others have not been found. Children, children, cried Ismail, the father of one of the children. He sat on the edge of the crater, his head in his hands, weeping. These are children here. This was my son. Another man staggered behind Ismail, unable to control his grief. Ahmed Mrui, the hospital's director, said more than 200 wounded people had been brought into the hospital, 1 in 3 of those living in the area. We have received 196 wounded and 25 dead. The majority of them are children and women. In Sidon, 25 miles south of Beirut. Now let us listen. Let us listen carefully to the distances we're talking about here. 25 miles south, Sidon, the second major city of Lebanon. Here, an Israeli airstrike on a bridge hit 2 vehicles, killing 10 people, wounding at least 7, medical sources told Reuters. They said both vehicles had been crossing the Ramleh Bridge, heading from the south towards Beirut. The people had been trying to escape, following the orders of those Israeli leaflets like the one that I had read before. The leaflets, they were trying to flee, and their vehicles, the vehicles carrying these people, the fleeing, were targeted specifically. Canada said that seven of its citizens had been killed in an Israeli strike while they were holidaying in southern Lebanese village of Eit Harun. And it was targeted again overnight and six killed. And then this is repeated throughout Lebanon. In Tyre, again, the annex of a hospital had been bombed the day before. The attack came as doctors were tending to the victims of a strike on a 12-story residential building. Apartment after apartment. The scenes are apparent as you look at on television at the visions of Beirut, but these are the scenes throughout Lebanon.
Lebanese devastated as bombing continues July 24th, yesterday. Much of Beirut is a devastated city. Its infrastructure is in shambles. Does our country not have the right to survive? Asked Nidal Motman, a 35-year-old taxi driver in downtown Beirut. We hate the American government for giving the green light through the Israelis to bomb us into the Stone Age. The facts on the ground add credence. The humanitarian crisis worsens by the hour. Close to a million Lebanese displaced, 64 bridges bombed. The roads are cut by bombings. There's no transportation for food or aid supplies. Israeli targets include the country's largest milk factory, the food factories, the pharmaceutical plants, the water treatment centers, the power plants, the grain silos, the hospitals, the ambulance convoys, the Greek Orthodox Church. The article is the little beginning of this devastation in description. Brothers and sisters, Lebanese told to leave the south. It is not known how many residents have already fled the region of the south, but as they leave, they are swooped down upon and slaughtered.
Ralph, it's clear from the analysis on CNN by the retired general who was showing how the Israelis operate in terms of their firepower. He stated that the Israelis have drones that are fly. These are unmanned drones that fly throughout the south that pick up, they have heat sensors, they pick up any moving target, and then supposedly they have video cameras, and that the reports of this movement is then goes to the fighter planes that are up in the air, also swarming all over the south of Lebanon. And that's where they get the pinpoint through the GPS of where to target. And consequently, what we have intentionally or unintentionally, and I believe intentionally, is targeting anything that moves. What's moving in southern Lebanon are the ambulances, are the minibuses, are the trucks, are the cars, are people who are trying to flee. We mentioned white phosphorus that's being reported now officially by the Lebanese government. We also have a report, and we will deal with Gaza in depth in other programs, but we have a report from the Palestinian Health Ministry that noted a new type of banned explosives containing poisonous material having been used in Gaza, the precursor to what is happening in Lebanon. The quote from the ministry report, quote, all 249 casualties inflicted by the Israeli war machine during the operation on Gaza, which started on June 27th, resulted from the shrapnel of new and developed shells and explosives, which caused amputation of limbs and burning of all the injured parts. Note, burning of all the injured parts. Most casualties who were submitted to surgeries were caused by strong explosions that led to the amputation and carbonization of limbs, while shrapnel caused small openings in the body through which internal parts, including intestines and spleen, are burnt.
My, that is a report by Dr. Al-Saka, who is the director of the Shifa Hospital in Gaza. In the preface to the Hidden History of Zionism, I describe how the one event that had so galvanized the people of Gaza was the Israeli invasion of Sifa Hospital to capture the wounded as they lay in their hospital beds. They were never to be seen again. And thousands of Gazans gathered outside to defend the hospital at the time. And now Sifa Hospital is the scene of the what you're describing is a particular chemical weapon that is radioactive. The flesh and the bone burns from within. And the radioactivity has been detected. They do not know. The Ministry of Health in Palestine has declared they have not been able to identify the particular chemical that has been deployed in this weaponry. Poison gas dropped in villages by Israeli military throughout southern Lebanon. Here is a report by Agence France-Presse with the detailed drawings of the chemical weapon that has been used in the delivery systems throughout Lebanon. And in The Guardian on July 20th, Srifa was a bustling hillside village. Then the Israeli jets came. Aliya, 30, lay on a life support system in the Jabal Amal Hospital in coma. She is one of only a handful of survivors from Srifa, a village in southeast Lebanon. The man treating her put her chances of survival at less than 20%. Fatima al-Ashma was more fortunate, but not much more. She lies in a hospital bed, struggling to breathe. The force of the blast, which targeted the minivan in which she was fleeing, crushed her chest, destroyed her lungs. She did sustain severe injuries to her neck and arm. Quote, she woke up with difficulty and described what happened. In the morning, we woke up to find 10 people in the village had been killed. The authorities told us that if we could leave, we should get out. We got in the car and left. As soon as we left, they targeted the car. There were 10 of us in the van, all wounded. No ambulance was allowed through. Anyone who is Srifa has been targeted. The dead bodies remain in the houses. There is a litany across suffering Lebanon of this account. And here on July 25th, today's date, the bombings have targeted Lebanese children. 55% of all casualties are children of 15 years of age or less, the hospital records show. This is worse than during the Lebanese civil war by far, Bilal Masri, assistant director of the largest hospital in Beirut, told IPS on Monday. Not only are most of our patients children, but most of the injured who have been brought in. We have a 30% fatality rate throughout Beirut. That means 30% of everyone hit by these Israeli bombs are dying. It is a catastrophe. The Israeli rate is so high because the Israelis are using new kinds of bombs which enter the shelters. They are bombing the bomb shelters that are filled with refugees. Masri told IPS that so many children were casualties because of the widespread, indiscriminate nature of the bombings, the children the least able to run away, but in particular, the targeting of the shelter is aiming and destroying the children of Lebanon. A 544-bed hospital, forced to open its emergency room 6 months early, has been trying to handle the casualties and is overwhelmed.
Ralph, we're reaching the end of this segment, and in future segments we will go into this much more, but we will also discuss the incredible stamina, the incredible resilience, and the incredible ability of Hezbollah in the face of this overwhelming Israeli military might. And to date, Hezbollah has had 3 military victories. 1, with the capture of the Israeli soldiers, the destruction of the Israeli tank, and being able to overcome that tank. That's the second part. And it overcome many of the Israeli tanks that are being brought into Lebanon. And also an attack on an Israeli warship in Beirut Harbor, a missile, a guided missile, a variant of the Chinese silkworm cruise missile that is the Israelis say is probably an Iranian C-802 missile, striking an Israeli warship. And 3, leading to the evacuation of Haifa an actual attack on an Israeli city, as well as the towns and villages that is reaching the Israeli heartland, to show that there is a resistance of the militants, that they will not stand still and they and allow the total devastation of the Lebanese population and the occupation of their country.
We will describe the resistance, Maya. In fact, the Israelis are finding that their soldiers and their tanks and their invading units are being defeated throughout southern Lebanon. But indeed, what we are dealing with here is a slaughter, an unmitigated slaughter. The not just the destruction of the infrastructure of the society, but the pulverization, as the headline in the San Francisco Chronicle on July 22nd, pulverized beyond recognition, a once thriving Beirut reduced to rubble. The headline on July 22nd, 2006, the smell of dust and rubble wafts a half mile a day away, a mixture of pulverized concrete and electric wiring, as Shakespeare had written in Julius Caesar, "O pardon me, thou bleeding piece of earth, that I am meek and gentle with these butchers." We shall return to the devastation of Lebanon and this genocidal war in part two.
This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Shunman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Apocalypse Now, the U.S.-Israeli Master Plan for the Middle East, Part 1, Death and Devastation in Lebanon. Our program will be archived at www.takingaim.info. You can reach us at takingaim@pacbell.net. That's PACBELL.net. We'll be with you next week.